Revelation chapter 20. Satan is bound because we're entering the millennial reign, the 1,000-year rule of Christ. Six times in this chapter, you'll see the word 1,000, which is the Latin for that is millennium. He's bound for 1,000 years, verse 2 says. And he's thrown into the abyss. Why? Verse 3 says, so that he cannot deceive the nations anymore. Just to understand, that's what he does now. He deceives. He tricks you. But his deception is so good and so real that it either doesn't appear as deception or you don't care that it's deception. Because he exacerbates the desire for it so heavy that you'll go after it anyway, even though you know it's deception. And there's probably not a person in here who hasn't fallen into this trap, where you've been deceived by something or somebody only to find out later it wasn't what it purported to be. So his ability to tap into our sinful flesh through deception will be removed. Now, that doesn't get rid of our sinful flesh. It just removes his ability to put a Bunsen burner under it and fire it up. So you would still, even if there were no devil, you would still have to deal with your sinful flesh, but you wouldn't have to deal with the additional deception of it. So he deceives the nation. Then I saw thrones, and he's set on the judgment. So it's time for the judgment now. For all those who worship the beast, verse 4, and have received the mark of the beast on their forehead or on their hand. For those of you who may have missed this, everybody in the world coming out of the tribulation who received the mark of the beast is going to be judged, because that meant that you threw your lot in with the Antichrist. The beast is called the Antichrist. You threw your lot in with him, and so now, coming into the millennium, there is this time of judgment. The rest of the dead did not come to life, verse 5, until the 1,000 years were completed. So the non-believers are not going to be raised, non-Christians throughout history are not being raised until the 1,000 years are up, that is, till the end of the millennium. The rest of the dead did not come to life until the 1,000 years were completed. This is the first resurrection, that is, of this group. Blessed and holy is the one, he says, who participates in the first resurrection. Over these, the second death has no power. You'll see what the second death is shortly. Now, as we saw, at the end of the 1,000 years, verse 7, the end of the millennium. Again, the millennium is the utopia that the world longs for. The world longs for that time when the world will be at peace, there will be no war. The lion will lay down with the lamb. There will be lifespans will just be exponentially exploding. The Bible says if you die at 100 years old, you died as a child. People will live so long. Like in the very early days of the Old Testament, you had this. So it is a world, it is utopia. And the reason it's going to be utopia is Jesus is ruling with a rod of iron, and there will be no allowance for rebellion. That's where you and I come in as Christians, because we will be ruling with him. So everybody who's a believer is going to be given a responsibility based on your faithfulness now to rule with him then. And you will oversee various departments, various responsibilities, various governments, various agencies within governments, all to carry out Jesus's will. And you will be absolutely perfectly suited to be able to do that, because remember, you will have a sinless glorified body because of the rapture. And so you will be able to perfectly institute whatever your sphere of responsibility is. And if you've been an unfaithful believer and all you get to do is a street sweeper, you'll be the best street sweeper on your street, okay? But that will come from serving the Lord now. So at the end of the 1,000 years, he's going to be released to deceive the nations which are on the four corners of the earth. So at the end of the millennium, he will be able to do what he was doing all throughout history and what he did in the tribulation, and that is to deceive the world, that is to pull out from them the rebellion that they were holding in. So there will be people all over the earth who will not want this man to rule over him, just like in biblical days when they said, crucify him, crucify him. And these were the same people who applauded him, you know, when he was doing his miracles. So there was no heart commitment to the Lord. But now, due to this deception, he will pull out what's already in them. He's not going to force them to do what's not in them. He's just going to deceive them and therefore reveal what is in them. Gog and Magog, taken from Ezekiel 38:39, means the enemies of God. Gog was, without getting too technical, Gog was the enemy. Magog was the land over which Gog ruled. And so he uses that term to define the enemies of God. And they came to the plain of the earth and surrounded the camp of the saints and the beloved city, Jerusalem. And fire came down from heaven and devoured them. So this battle is going to be real quick. Fire is going to come down from heaven and devour them. And the devil will be placed and be tormented day and night forever with the false prophet and the beast. Without getting too technical on the issue of hell, hell has different levels. We have already told that the false prophet and beast are placed in a bottomless pit, a pit that has no end to it. And they are tormented day and night, which means continually forever. And so this will be the eternal judgment. Now this brings up something that I can at least introduce now, and that is Matthew 25:41. In Matthew 25:41, it says, hell was prepared for Satan and his angels. So hell was never prepared for people. Hell was prepared for Satan and his angels due to their rebellion against God. Okay, that took place before God ever created man. So you only go to hell because you choose Satan and his angels. You go to hell by choice, not by chance. There has to be a decision made. And so he's placed there, and he's placed in the lowest part, which is the bottomless pit, to be tormented day and night. Then I saw a great white throne, verse 11, from whose presence the earth and heaven fled away, and no place was found for them. The dead, great and small, were standing before the throne. This is the white throne judgment of all non-Christians or non-believers in history. So every non-believer will be resurrected, and their unglorified bodies will unite with their souls. You're going to discover on this Sunday what happens to the souls of non-believers when they die. Well, you'll see what happens to the souls of believers too, but of non-believers, since this judgment is only for non-believers when they die. At this point, just like in the rapture, when our new bodies, glorified bodies, merge with our currently existing souls. Because remember, you are your soul. You are not your body. Your body is a house for your soul. The body houses the soul. The reason you know you're you, that you exist, is because you have a soul. And the soul is eternal. The body is not. The body dies. So Christians will receive a glorified body for their currently existing soul. Unbelievers will receive an unglorified body. In other words, it will be a body that is suited for their location. Believers will receive a body suited for our location. They will receive a body suited for their location. And their soul will be merged with that, just like in our case. And so he says, we explained the difference between the books, plural, and the book of life. The books, plural, are the books of deeds. The books of deeds, the things you did in your life, good, bad, and otherwise, have been recorded. They're recorded for believers for your rewards, but they're recorded for unbelievers to determine your level of judgment. The books, plural, have nothing to do with where you're spending eternity. Verse 15, and if any man's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. So the lake of fire had to do with whether your name is in the book of life. It had nothing to do with the book of deeds. The book of Deeds talks about the kind of life you lived as a non-believer to determine your level of judgment, not to determine your eternal destiny. Why? Because men are not saved by their works. You don't earn salvation by doing good works. You receive salvation by faith in the finished work of Jesus Christ. Not having my own righteousness. I don't want to stand before God with my book of deeds. Because this book of deeds includes what you did, what you said, what you thought. I mean, this book of deeds is comprehensive. How what you did affected other people. I mean, it includes all of that. I don't know about you. Maybe you want to stand before him with your deeds. That's not what I want to do. I want to stand before him with the righteousness of Jesus Christ. I want to be covered by his righteousness, which is perfect righteousness. I have a credit score, perfect credit score, because God has credited to me and to every believer the righteousness of Jesus Christ. So the book of deeds is to determine the level of this person because their name is not written in the book of life. So this ends history as we know it. History is over. And we now have entered into the eternal state for believers, because he's talked about the eternal state for non-believers already. Chapter 21, verse 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth passed away, and there is no longer any sea. Wow. The heaven and earth that you and I know today, the galaxies, the planets, all that, has disintegrated. Every molecule, every atom, every proton, every neutron, it has all disintegrated, which shouldn't be a problem since God spoke and it came into existence. For him, it's not that hard. It disintegrated, the Bible says in 2 Peter 3:10, with fervent heat. And so there is the uncreation. There's the creation when he created, then there is the uncreation. Why the uncreation? The uncreation, because God must remove every remnant of sin in order for the eternal state to be what the eternal state is designed to be. All sin must be removed, including sin in creation, in the created order. And so God will uncreate the universe. Now, that naturally raises the question, I'm sure. Well, if he uncreated the universe, what's there? Because there's nothing to be there if he uncreates the universe. Well, there is something to be there, and that is because God existed before he created. So since God existed before he created, God simply exists in another realm. He exists in the non-created realm. Not in the created realm. Now, I know this gives you an Excedrin PM headache. Okay, and I understand that. But just think of the thought. Just the thought. I don't know if you've taken time to think about it. But the fact that God is the uncreated creator of all things. There's never been a time God has not been. Now, if you sit in a room, turn the lights off, sit in a chair, and think about that too long, you'll jump out somebody's window. You will go stark raving mad. Because that is an inconceivable thought. That you have an uncreated creator. That there's never been a time God has not been. But that doesn't solve the problem of the evolutionists, because the evolutionists still got to keep going back to something. So getting rid of God doesn't get rid of your problem. Your problem is you got to start with something, and then you got to ask the question, where did the thing I start with come from? So you're right. So I would rather start with something that knows something rather than start with something that comes out of nowhere, okay? So there is this new heaven and new earth. And it's something about this new earth that's unlike the old earth, and that is there is no sea. There's no sea. Three-fourths of the earth is water. Three-fourths of the earth is sea. There are 8 billion people on planet Earth with water. Now follow this. There is 8 billion people on earth when 3/4 of the earth is water, which means it's not lived on. You cruise on it, you don't live on it. If you drive across Texas, you drive to El Paso, you drive to the Panhandle, you drive across that, you know how much open space that is? Unlived on territory. So even with sea, there is vast amounts of land that has never been touched. Some of it can't be touched. You couldn't live on it. A lot of it that can be touched has not yet been touched. So you can imagine how much space is available on earth where there is no sea. When the earth is 3/4 water, seas and oceans and rivers and stuff. He says there's no sea. So you talking about spread out space. And this now also involves the heavens. Now, man has been trying, we got to the moon, we're trying to get to Mars, and we got a little telescope to help us see a few other places. And now they're telling us there are galaxies on top of galaxies. And they've spent all this time trying to get a little place, a little distance. So if there are new earth and new heavens, you've got all this space on earth, and now you've got the rest of the universe to be discovered. And the galaxies on top of galaxies. So you're dealing with a realm that will blow your mind. It is just staggering. Now, God will not give us a whole lot about heaven. He'll give you enough to whet your appetite, but he doesn't want to give you too much so you commit suicide to get there. The only man allowed to go to heaven to come back to talk about it. He does that in 2 Corinthians chapter 12. He's taken to heaven and he said, "And I saw things that are unlawful to utter." He says, "What I saw, I couldn't even fix my mouth to express. It was beyond my ability to articulate it. When I see what sinful man can do, men can come up with these phenomenal things, and man is finite. He's limited. You have an unlimited person who's constructing this thing with no flaws. I mean, so it's beyond. So what he does in chapter 21 is he gives you a little clue, a little taste by showing you the capital city called the New Jerusalem. Verse 2. "And I saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as a bride adorned for her husband." So God is saying, and I know this sounds like the Sci-Fi Network, but it's God talking. So there will be a satellite city that will come down from heaven to earth. Jesus told his disciples in John 14, "I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I'm coming again to receive you unto myself." He told that to the church. What is the church called? The bride of Christ. So guess what Jesus was talking about? He was talking about the heavenly city that's now coming down, which was up there when you and I go. So when we die, we are going to heaven and we are going to this city called the New Jerusalem. The problem is that city is in heaven. But during the millennium, we're working on earth. So we got our homeland city up there. That's our heavenly city. And it's a city you can go to. Because remember, Jesus stood on a cloud when he got his glorified body and he ascended up to heaven. So it's a city you can go to. But the work is on earth. So in the new heaven and new earth, when the earth has been now made brand new, the New Jerusalem, this city, the capital of the earth, like Jerusalem physically will be the capital during the millennium, the physical capital during the millennium in the Jerusalem that exists now. Once God destroys it all, he's going to have a new capital city, still called Jerusalem, that will come down from heaven to earth. You know how many people look on New Year's Eve at that little round ball coming down in New York? You got a million people standing out there in the freezing cold and millions upon millions looking at it on television. Well, you ain't seen nothing yet. You wait till this baby comes down. The new Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, made ready as the bride adorned. So just like a bride gets ready for a wedding, it's going to be spectacular. And a loud voice from the throne, behold, the tabernacle of God is among men, and he will dwell among them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be among them. This is God dwelling in the midst of his creation on earth. And he will wipe away every tear from their eyes, and there will be no longer any death. There will no longer be any mourning, nor crying, nor pain. The first things have passed away. That's with the heaven and the earth. All that's gone. So there will be nothing ever again to bring sorrow. Nothing ever again to bring sorrow. What you and I experience today, there can be very bad days, a lot of tears, a lot of crying, a lot of hurt, a lot of disappointments. But on this day, when God does this one, it will be spectacular. And he who sits on the throne said, I am making all things new. He said, write, for these words are faithful and true. You can bank your bottom dollar on this one, he says. He said to me, it is done. I'm Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end. I will give to the one who thirsts from the springs of the water of life without cost. In other words, you know when you're thirsty, how refreshing it is to get that cold glass of water? What he's talking about is maximum fulfillment, satisfaction. The satisfaction will be spectacular. You will never be bored. You will never be tired. You will never be weary. You will never have negative emotions. You will be able to drink, so to speak, satisfaction. So there will be nothing that will not be satisfaction. He who overcomes will inherit these things, and I will be his God, and he will be my son. Remember, to inherit is not to enter. To inherit means to get the benefits of, because you're not even here if you didn't enter, because all the unsaved are not here. So to inherit means to even get more that God has for you. It's the bonus of those Christians who are fully committed. And for the cowardly and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and immoral person and sorcerers and idolaters and liars, their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Now that's a description of hell. Here is the problem with hell. Remember, I described hell as entering into a place with your unglorified body and your unredeemed soul. So whatever is true of you negatively in this life, you carry it with you in that life. So one of the issues of hell is you having to live with you without any hope of improvement. And you having to live with everybody else without any hope of improvement. Now, you may not be able to grasp that now, but some of us can't live with us now. But you become locked into your sinfulness. The one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls full of the seven last plagues came and spoke with me, saying, come here, I will show you the bride, the wife of the Lamb. Okay, so those are the believers in the new city. And he carried me away in the spirit in a great and high mountain and showed me the holy city Jerusalem coming down out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. So it's spectacular. Her brilliance was like a very costly stone and a stone of crystal clear jasper. So this is like, the best way I can describe it is like a cut diamond. It's like a cut diamond. Okay, he gives you some information about the capital city. Remember, everybody's not in the capital. This is just the capital, but it's the capital of the whole earth. But earth is huge because you can live on more than one-fourth of it. It has a great high wall with 12 gates and 12 angels, and the names were written on them, which are the names of the 12 tribes of the sons of Israel. And there were the gates of the east and the west, three gates on the east and three on the north and three on the south and three on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundation stones, and on them were the 12 names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. So you got Israel, 12 tribes, and you got the church, 12 apostles. So both groups are represented, Old and New Testament. The one who spoke with me had a gold measuring rod to measure the city and its gates and its wall. The city is laid out as a square, and its length is as great as the width. And he measured the city with the rod, 1,500 miles in length, and width and height are equal. Okay, now watch this. This is one city. This is one city, and it's 1,500 miles square and up. The height of it is 1,500 miles. Now, we can't, the only thing we have to relate this to are skyscrapers. So you go up to a skyscraper, you know, and so you can look out. But this city is called that high. 1,500 miles is half the size of the United States. It takes about 3,000 miles to go from one end of the country. If you fly from New York to LA, it's about 3,000 miles. So just half the United States is the size of the city, and the city doesn't just go out, it goes up. So it's a multi-storied city. Now that's kind of blows your mind, does mine. 1,500 miles each way, and this is just the city. It's the capital. In every direction. He goes on, and he measured its walls, 72 yards according to human measurements, which are also angelic measurements. So using human measurements, the walls of this city, 72 yards. So a football field is 100 yards. Right? So think about 3/4 of a football field is the size of the wall around the city. So the wall that encases this city is the size of 3/4 of a football field. Staggering. When you just think of the wall and the size of the city, and it's just one city, but of course it's the key city. The material on the wall was jasper. The city was pure gold, like clear glass. Now, I don't even know what to say. All I can tell you is, it's a beast. The foundation stones of the city wall were adorned with every kind of precious stone. Jasper, sapphire, he goes into all the emeralds, and he goes to Sardis, just you could just read through that. The 12 gates, and the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each one of the gates was a single pearl, and the street of the city was pure gold, like transparent glass. This is where you get the thing, streets of gold. Streets of gold. Not tar, not cement. This is gold streets of this city. I saw no temple in it, for the Lord God, the Almighty, and the Lamb are its temple. Why? Because there will be a temple in the tribulation. There will be a temple in the millennium. But there will not be a temple here because God does not need a representation of his presence. He will have his presence there. And the city has no need of the sun or of the moon to shine on it. For the glory of God has illuminated it, and its lamp is the Lamb. This one blows my mind. There is no son. Now watch this. The only reason we have a son is because God made one. 93 million miles away is the sun. I told you one time, if you were driving a car to the sun at 100 miles an hour, nonstop, it would take you 200 years to get to it. That's how far the sun is from the earth. And yet that sun lights the whole planet in a 24-hour circuit. And he says there will be no need for the sun, because when God makes his presence here, everything stays lit forever. See, the only reason you need night now is because you need to sleep. There you won't need to sleep. You have a glorified body that won't get tired. Nor will it get bored. The nations will walk by its light. Okay, watch this. We're in the eternal state, but we still have nations. You see? So let's forget this being, sitting on a cloud playing a harp. We've got nations. We've got people functioning in national context. And this is the new heaven and new earth. And the kings of the earth will bring their glory to it. So you got rulers. Because we're not just talking about being in heaven, we're talking about being on earth as well. In the daytime, for there will be no night there. So he could have said in the daytime, and it's all daytime. Its gates will never be closed. And they will bring the glory and the honor of the nations into it. So this is a hopping place, because everybody's coming. Like people going to Mecca, everybody's coming to this place. It's spectacular, so why wouldn't they? And nothing unclean, and no one who practices abomination and lying shall ever come into it, but only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. I don't know about you, but just knowing that that is the eternal future, it is nothing short of spectacular.